Thank you so much. And it's such a pleasure to be here. I so look forward to getting to be with you all and sharing the Dharma, but sharing practice, you know, really just sitting together and being in practice and having conversation together about our practice and how it supports us and our questions and all of the explorations. So I come to you first and foremost as a fellow student, truly as a fellow student, as a fellow explorer on the path. And so we will be in practice together this morning. So just taking a moment, if you haven't already done it, and just look at who's here, taking in each other's faces, because it's just so lovely to connect and know that we are doing this together. And what a privilege it is to get to practice at all, that we have the space and time in our lives to give this to ourselves and to offer our presence to each other. It's a big deal. I think that this is not a small thing that we're doing. So thank you all for being here, and we'll begin our morning. The way our morning will go is that we'll begin shortly with an arriving meditation. And then after the arriving meditation, I'll offer a few thoughts. We'll check in with each other, and then we'll have a Dharma talk and a short break and a longer Dharma talk after the meditation. And we'll have plenty of time to talk with each other. So as Carlita said, if you're having any tech issues, please chat her. If you have any content issues, also send it to Carlita, and we'll include your questions when we get to the Q&A. Okay, so let's just begin right off with an arriving meditation. Finding that comfortable posture that you enjoy, that you can most settle into to arrive. Finding this relaxed yet awake posture, whether you're sitting or standing, or perhaps you're even lying down. Just as the body relaxes and settles down upon whatever you're connected to, we invite the mind also to drop down into the body and into the heart. Sensing how the body is held from below, the earth, the building you're in, the floor, the furniture, settling in. Sensing into the breath, the way the breath comes and goes. Inviting each inhale to be an arriving, each exhale a settling. Over and over, this arriving and settling. Knowing that for this time we have together this morning, this time of practice, there's really nothing to do and nowhere to go. A practice of coming right into this moment, just as it is. Open mind with a little curiosity. Just being willing to be with whatever arises. becoming aware of whatever is arising. Notice what you're aware of right now, be it a state of body, mind, or heart. Simply notice. Our practice asks us to be curious, to notice what we notice. Eddie Hillesum, who was a writer during the Holocaust, I believe she was Dutch, died in the Holocaust. She said, "Sometimes the most important thing in a whole day is the rest we take between two deep breaths or the turning inwards for 5 short minutes." Notice that slight rest between 2 breaths. Arrive there. Sometimes the most important thing in a whole day is the rest we take between 2 deep breaths or the turning inwards for 5 short minutes. Offer you a reflection question for the next minute or so. Where do you find rest? When you think of rest, when you think of refuge, what comes to mind? And equally importantly, when you think of rest and refuge, can you notice that in the body? So, coming back, wonder if anybody would be willing to share. And I'd love to know a little bit about, just with the dropping in of that question, how do you feel rest or refuge in the body, or what comes to mind when you think of rest or refuge? Would anybody be willing to say? Looks like Vivian. Quiet, rest and quiet in the heart, Linnea says in the chat.
Hi.
Good morning.
I really enjoyed that whole meditation, but when you said rest and refuge at the end, I realized that that's exactly what I need, what I'm missing. It's not that I have none, yeah. But that just sums up what I'm missing from my life right this moment, and going back and trying to look forward, trying to imagine a time and a way to find it.
Yeah. You know, I so appreciate you being, you saying that and recognizing it, being willing to say it, because I too have been thinking about that a lot. And we're going to talk about that today, rest and refuge, because I get the sense that it can be far away for many of us right now. Yeah, thank you so much, Vivian. Anybody else? Looks like Ellen. Good morning.
I've had an extra challenging year on top of all the other challenges we're all dealing with. Got surgery in February, just before all the crazy COVID, and have had such physical changes due to cancer treatments and the changes in my body, that it's hard to locate even the heart that I could depend on in my practice. It's blocked. Actually, they put some a structure ahead of my heart because they had to take some ribs out, and so it's hard to get to where my heart is. You have to kind of go in from the side physically, even just for a scan. So I'm working at trying to find a different way in, kind of using the whole chakra interconnected systems to try to get to where the energy can move and can be settled. And I've really returned to my practice. I got away from it because it was so difficult with these challenges. And just in the last, frankly, couple of days, I've been able to get back to some kind of daily practice and feel like I'm beginning to reconnect.
Ellen, thank you very much for your willingness to share this with all of us. And first off, I want to say I'm very sorry you've had this challenge, and it sounds really, it's big. It doesn't sound big, it is big. Yes, and you're brave to show up just like this and be able to share this in your courage and in this vulnerability, and actually take in from all of us who just were able to hear this, that we can hold your challenge too in the space of the Sangha to really offer you support. And that sense of, I really appreciate what you said about the physical block, that there really is a structure that blocks that. But you, it sounds to me like you have the skill and the practice and the background to know that you can come in energetically from a different place and find that opening. And I'm very happy to know that just in the last couple of days, there's a little opening, and you're here today. And you're here today. And I wish for you healing, complete healing, so you can really find that rest and refuge inside yourself, and so that you can be healthy. And also lots of support for you for finding that doorway in, because there's not just one way. And to feel confident that whatever doorway that is for you, to find any amount of rest or refuge inside yourself is the right place. It doesn't have to be the physical heart, right? It really doesn't. It can be anywhere where that opening is. And to keep doing it, keep at it, knowing that every amount of awareness you bring into any amount of wholeness that you feel is adding to it.
Yes. Thank you. I appreciate that, and I appreciate it from all of you.
Yeah.
And I did get a positive scan this week that things are moving towards some improvement. So I'm very encouraged.
Oh, I'm very happy for you. That's a very big deal.
Thank you.
And I really also want to acknowledge to everybody that all of the challenges that we are inside of right now, collectively, we are all sharing, but we each also have our personal challenges that we would have had probably other anyway. And so this is not easy. This is just not easy. And you don't have to make it what it isn't, right? We don't have to say, I'm fine. And maybe some days we are, but this is just not easy. So this practice of sharing our hearts and showing up together is really vital to our well-being. Okay, I want to move on and talk a little for a few minutes, and then we'll move into our longer meditation. Last month, when I was here and some of you were here last month, we were talking about how do we find strength and steadiness and courage. And we looked at the practices of simplifying, renunciation, letting go, and the practices of faith, trust, and confidence. And I want to continue with this same kind of theme around how do trust and confidence show up and support us during these intense times? And how can we find some stability and reliability through our practices? And I asked you about rest and refuge because one of the practices, two of the practices that I find extremely helpful when the stakes feel pretty high and the anxiety is up, is coming right back to the foundation, the ground of our practice, to begin at the beginning. I want to talk about refuge today, refuges, precepts, pardon me, and then next week we'll talk more about the Brahmaviharas, the beautiful practices of the heart. And to just say that all of our practices support us. No matter which one you choose, it's the right one. The right one that connects us to our mind and our heart and our deep values of kindness and non-harming. So all of these practices are mutually connected. And especially during difficult times, I find that it's very helpful for me to come back to the basics, come back to really the ground and begin again. And you know, so often one of our meditation instructions is always begin again, wherever you are, start where you are, begin again. So I want to do that today with us. A number of Buddhist texts begin with the welcome that says, O nobly born, O you who are the sons and the daughters of the awakened ones, the Buddhas and the Bodhisattvas, do not forget who you really are. Do not forget your true nature. They begin this because we are constantly being pointing to, it's a beautiful expression of our goodness. It's out of respect for who we are, that we were born with basic goodness in us. And we can get distant from that. And we can get distant from that during really difficult times. But to come back and remember, oh yeah, what are my deep fundamental values? And oftentimes they come down to values of kindness and non-harming, our ethical practices. And also this injunction, O nobly born, to be referred to as, O nobly born, you who are the sons and the daughters of the awakened ones, means that we too have the capacity to awaken. And that's exciting, And when I think about what does it mean to awaken, you may have your own relationship to what awakening is. The way I relate to awakening is that there are these times and these experiences that we have that help us understand our lives in a deeper way. Perhaps experiences that happen that we say, oh yeah, I thought I got it before, but now I get it. When you really understand something in a way that it changes your life, so you actually can't do things the way you may have done them before, or maybe it fundamentally changes a relationship that you have because you understand something much more deeply about yourself. I think these are moments of awakening because it changes us. It brings us into such a deep meaning. So that's how I think about awakening. And it's a worthy reflection for yourself to take that on in your own practice, to spend some time with what does that actually mean for me? And certainly through many lineages, there's lots of discussion of what awakening means, the ultimate uprooting of greed and ill will and delusion is a big awakening. And we'll talk more about that. But just this injunction, O nobly born, O you who are the sons and the daughters of the awakened ones, the Buddhas and the Bodhisattvas. The Bodhisattva is the person who commits himself or herself, themselves, to alleviating the suffering of all beings. Do not forget who you really are. Do not forget your true nature. And we forget. And so our practice today will be a practice of coming back to exploring what the refuges are. What does it mean to live a life of non-harming? So we'll move into our meditation now. With that in mind, finding a posture in which you can sit for the next 20, 25 minutes and be comfortable. O nobly born, O you of glorious origins, this is another iteration, remember your radiant true nature, the essence of mind, the goodness of heart. Trust it. Return to it. It is home. Finding that place in the body that is home for you. Finding that place in the heart and letting the mind settle in there. I'll offer you some ways of settling, feeling the groundedness of the body. May I be grounded in my body. Sensing down into the body. And now bringing the awareness into the whole heart center, the whole area of the chest and the upper back, upper side ribs, this energetic center of the heart. May my heart become open, soft, stable, available. Noticing the state of mind. May my mind become clear and balanced. Just as all the glitter in the glitter jar of thoughts settles, inviting the mind to become clear and balanced. And in this moment, may I breathe with ease. Just allowing the breath to come and go, just as it is, trusting it. Grounded in the body. The heart opening. The mind becoming clear and balanced. Breathing with ease. When the mind drifts off, be gentle with yourself. Come back. Find that place where you can really settle your attention, whether it's the body, or the breath, or the pulse even, perhaps sensing your own pulse, and begin again, over and over again, and we'll sit quietly. as we continue to sit, letting the mind rest any amount, coming back to that place where you find a little peace, a little refuge in your own being. Notice that it's there, any amount. And if you like, get close to it. What does that rest actually feel like? It might be unnameable, just a sense, a deep sense. Perhaps let yourself know it, experience it, get close to it, just be. Once again, from this quiet place of rest and refuge, a place that hopefully there's some ease inside of you, any amount. We'll move into our practice of metta, loving kindness. The Buddha famously said, you can search the whole world over and not find anyone more deserving of your love than yourself. What a radical thing to say. You can search the whole world over and not find anyone more deserving of your love than yourself. Holding yourself now with that kind of tenderness, kindness, warmth, to be a good friend, a dear friend to yourself. Imagine that. also said that you cannot grow wrong when you put a little peace, a little kindness in the space between you and whatever you are aware of. You cannot go wrong when you bring a little peace and kindness into your awareness. And with that, do our traditional metta practice of offering ourselves these blessings of well-being. Again, holding yourself kindly. Just repeat these phrases silently to yourself. May I feel safe and protected. May I feel safe and protected. May I feel peaceful and happy. May I feel peaceful and happy. May I feel healthy and strong. May I feel healthy and strong. May I live with ease and well-being. May I live with ease and well-being. And noticing in your whole mind, heart, body, do you have any sense of safety, peace, strength and ease? Allow that to fill you, to rest in any amount of these blessings, the intention of these blessings. Let that fill you, any amount. Trusting, taking refuge in the goodness of yourself. And then bringing to mind anybody in your life who you know would benefit from receiving these blessings of goodwill, the sharing of this goodwill. Bringing this being to mind, could even be a pet. And then silently offering these same blessings. Perhaps it's wordless, perhaps it's just this radiating of goodwill from your heart to theirs. And take a few minutes silently to do that. And as you do this practice of offering blessings, radiating metta, notice how that feels in the body. The body being the whole body, which includes the mind and the heart. Just notice. Noticing the quality of mind. There may be a sense of rest, sense of pleasant or comfortable mind. Sylvia says, really, what's true is that the mind in blessing mode is free of all kinds of negativity. I think that's true. Really, what's true in the mind is that the mind in blessing mode is free. And from John O'Donohue, another blessing. May I live this day compassionate of heart, clear in word, gracious in awareness, courageous in thought, generous in love. May I live this day compassionate of heart, clear in word, gracious in awareness, courageous in thought, generous in love. So we'll move into a short break. Come back at 11 o'clock and then we'll begin again. Thank you, everybody. And try to hold this quality of stillness that you've cultivated. All right, welcoming everybody back. I know we're all slowly getting back. Can you hear the bell? Yeah, good. I'm gonna ring a little bit more so people can potentially hear us if they're in another room. Well, I just took a few minutes to read a couple of the comments in the chat. And before we start with the Dharma talk, I'd actually like to respond to a couple of those comments. I think that it could be valuable for all of us. Michael writes, noticing the persistent sense of aloneness, that can be really a very real sense, especially as we are in this time where we're mostly staying home and we are not physically at Spirit Rock together, and the separateness that is true, and that feeling connected and belonging are important for a sense of true rest and refuge, exactly. And we will talk about that around taking refuge in each other, the Sangha. It's vital. And so part of my inspiration, I don't know if it's inspiration or my actual desire to revisit the refuges, is because of that, because we can be so separated and need to connect and need to know that we do belong to each other. And then from Anne, the word refuge brings to mind nature and the colors green and blue. Whatever kind of imagery comes to mind when we have certain words that, words, smells, sights, they all trigger different, maybe emotions or other thoughts or memories. Green and blue are calming, really very calming colors. So bringing that in, because maybe even sensing a color has a tactile sense in some way. Maybe it has a smell, it has some good memory. And part of what helps us cultivate capacity and resiliency is connecting to what feels good. Your resources. Resources are memories or experiences or things that we do in real time that actually cultivate the sense of well-being. So color is a real, it can be a very true resource. And Marcy, how do I deal with being triggered from the mention of the Holocaust? Really important question. And it's a huge question. But what I want to offer in this is that when we feel triggered by something like that, just a word, whatever the word is, because it brings us back into traumatic memory, pain, stress, agitation, all of those words. Our practice of mindfulness of the body is critical right here. Because when the Buddha taught, there is a body, that is an enormous teaching that invites us to drop down into where we can find resource, where we can find some steadiness. So in the moment of being frightened, triggered, anxiety goes up, stress goes up, the practice of feel your feet on the ground and your butt in the chair and take a breath is not a small thing. It's actually very powerful for bringing the nervous system back into balance, because we live up here mostly. And the mind is so powerful. So we hear a word and it brings us into a painful experience. And we can keep the thoughts going. The mind is very good at that. And it keeps the fear and the agitation going. But if we turn the awareness inward and downward, literally, turn the awareness downward into the body, the sense of being grounded, which is why I said first thing in the meditation instructions, May I be grounded in my body. Because it takes us out of the busy thinking mind down into something more solid. And the feet literally touching the earth, touching the ground, or feeling the places your body is connected to whatever you're sitting on. And if you really put your awareness into, oh, what do the backs of my thighs actually feel like touching the chair? What do my feet actually feel like touching my shoes and on the ground? That is taking the mind out of the mind, the spin, and down into the body. Now, that does not say that everything around the word, the Holocaust, all of that stuff, that doesn't mean that that's not true. It is true. But right in the moment, what we want to do is, the question is, how do I deal with being triggered by the mention of, and we all have something that we probably could point to that we're triggered by the mention of. So what we want to do is not get hijacked by it and go into the body and let the body be a place to be held. Even if it's a small place in the body, it might be the hands, it might be the fingers. It doesn't have to be the whole body, because sometimes when we're triggered and the adrenaline is rushing, we may feel the heart pounding, the breath may be increasing, but we go to that place that is more stable. And oftentimes it can be the hands, the feet, or the bottom. So Marcy, wherever you are, I hope that that was helpful. And I hope that was helpful to others as well. I think it's a very important question. All right, let's begin. Let's begin. I want to offer some Dharma thoughts this morning, and we will have time to talk with each other. All right. I'm going to turn my chat off so I am not triggered by it. Just with my attention being scattered, I really just want to be able to see all of you. So we begin at the beginning, and we begin again and again and again. And I want to start with this piece that comes from Jack Kornfield's book, The Wise Heart. It's a very beautiful story. In a large temple north of Thailand's ancient capital of Sukhothai, there once stood an enormous and ancient clay Buddha. Though not the most handsome or refined work of Thai Buddhist art, it had been cared for over a period of 500 years and become revered for its sheer longevity. Violent storms, changes of government, and invading armies had come and gone, but the Buddha endured. At one point, however, the monks who tended the temple noticed that the statue had begun to crack and would soon be in need of repair and repainting. After a stretch of particularly hot, dry weather, one of the cracks became so wide that a curious monk took his flashlight and peered inside. What shone back at him was a flash of brilliant gold. Inside the plain old statue, the temple residents discovered one of the largest and most luminous gold images of the Buddha ever created in Southeast Asia. Now uncovered, the golden Buddha draws throngs of people from all over Thailand. The monks believed that this shining work of art had been covered in plaster and clay to protect it from times of conflict and unrest. In much the same way, sometimes each of us has encountered threatening situations that lead us to cover over our innate nobility. And just as the people of the Sukhothai had forgotten about the golden Buddha, we too can forget about our essential nature, our good hearts. And so much of the time we are operating from the protective layer. Don't touch me, don't touch me. This armoring that happens. And it can be very unconscious. The primary aim of our practice is to help us see beneath this armoring and bring out our original goodness, who we really are, our most natural, kind-hearted selves. I love that story. Can you imagine being the monk who shone his light inside the crack and got this brilliant gold? saw that. And then can you imagine how exciting that would be to say, wait a minute, what's inside there? What's inside there? So our practice is inviting us to do that with ourselves, to peel back the layers of all of our lives, of all of our experiences. And to do that, we need some trust. We need confidence. We need faith. The Buddha's word, the Pali word for faith is sada, which means to place the heart upon. And we can do this, and we need all of our supports to do it. So we return to our fundamental practices so we can peel back these layers. Now, I'm not talking about peeling back the layers so much that we don't have any boundaries. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about getting to know ourselves deeply from the inside out so we know who we are and how we can best operate in our lives from a place of safety, but not blocked off. So we come back to this fundamental practice of taking refuge in the Buddha and in the Dharma and in the Sangha. And we'll talk about that. But I also want to talk about it from a couple of different perspectives. A number of years ago, I came across what is called the Monk's Manifesto. And this comes from a woman who I believe is Irish. Her name is Christine Valtners-Paintner. And she's the abbess of an online abbey. It's called the Abbey of the Arts. And it's a monastery, what she says is a monastery without walls. Anybody can come anytime to nurture contemplative practices. And so she's written this manifesto. And I think they're similar to taking refuge in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. And if you look at many wisdom traditions, there are oftentimes ways that we recommit to our practices. We recommit to this desire to cultivate wholesomeness and wake up in our lives. So here are a couple of these pieces of the Monk's Manifesto. The first one says, I commit to finding moments each day for silence and solitude, to make space for another voice to be heard, and to resist a culture of noise and constant stimulation. I'll read that again. I commit to finding moments each day for silence and solitude, to make space for another voice to be heard. I think that is parallel to taking refuge in the Buddha. The next one is, I commit to radical acts of hospitality by welcoming the stranger both without and within. I recognize that when I make space inside my heart for the unclaimed parts of myself, I cultivate compassion and the ability to accept those places in others. This is the Dharma. To make space to welcome the stranger both without and within. To get to know the unclaimed, unknown parts of myself. The third one, I commit to cultivating community by finding kindred spirits along the path, soul friends with whom I can share my deepest longings, and mentors who can offer guidance and wisdom for the journey. The Sangha, right? Our community. So let's explore these commitments in parallel to the refuges. To take refuge in the Buddha. This means something different oftentimes for each one of us. It might be that to take refuge, let's just take that apart for a moment. That means this place that we can go that is reliable. It's a secure, reliable place that we can trust, that we can rest. That's what we can say, to take refuge, to show up, to allow that place to rest there. Reliable, place of reliable truth. It's also how I think about it. So to take refuge in the Buddha, it might be that for you, you take refuge in the historical Buddha himself. Or maybe it's seeing Buddha nature, this quality that we can wake up, this inner wisdom. Committing ourselves to the possibility of awakening. And it might be that we see taking refuge in the Buddha as taking refuge in elders or a mentor, teachers. I think that I feel it most as certainly what the Buddha represented, that here was this brilliant person who figured out suffering and the end of suffering, how to manage our minds and hearts. So when I take refuge in the Buddha, I think of it as, well, that guy did it. I think I can figure that. I want to do that too. That's how I think about it, is what an incredible example he's set for what's possible for us. But I also think about it as my wisdom, our wisdom. So how do we know what we know? How do we trust what we know? And can what we know, our inner wisdom, can we let it guide us? So we come back to the first of this monk's manifesto. I commit to finding moments each day for silence and solitude to make space for another voice to be heard. That's taking refuge in the Buddha, in this inner wisdom. To take refuge in the Dharma. This is committing ourselves to this path of practice, to the path of awakening, to the path of loving awareness. So what is the Dharma? It's often translated as what the Buddha taught. The teachings of the Buddha are the Dharma, or the truth. Now, I use that word carefully, though, because how do I know what the truth is? We can get into a conversation about my truth, your truth, our truth, different ways of thinking. And so I think I like to think of truth more as the nature of things, really the way things are. And this is what we are supported to do over and over in our practice. This is the peeling back of the layers, taking off these filters so we can really see how things are outside of how we are, to really come into an awareness through our direct experience. And so this asks us, what do we know to be true? What have we learned from practice? It's not such an easy question to answer, because we've learned a lot. And then sometimes I feel like I haven't learned anything. I mean, we go all over the place in our practice, and especially in these times that are so fraught, and for some of us feels upside down, uncertain. This can be difficult. So taking refuge in literally the teachings of the Buddha can be a very grounding place to come back to, that gives us our bearings. I feel that way about it. There's this great story about one of Suzuki Roshi's students coming to him and remembering Suzuki Roshi, founder of San Francisco Zen Center, profoundly important Zen master. The student comes to him and says, Roshi, please, there's so much to learn here. Tell me, what is the most important thing? And the story goes that Suzuki Roshi said, to find out what is the most important thing. Thank you very much. I wanted a straight answer, right? It's so Zen, but it's so true. What is the most important thing? Is to find out what is the most important thing. And so how do we do that? We come back to our practice over and over and over again. And right now, what is the most important thing for you? And then ask yourself that question later today or tomorrow. It may shift. And this is how the teachings are, is that we change, our needs change, our perceptions change, our what we feel, our moods, the energies. And so to have the courage to ask that question over and over again, what would be helpful now? What is the most important thing now? So what we learn from this path of exploration through our direct experience it's critical. And when I say direct experience, actually, I'm talking about actually what is happening for us. And the Buddha said famously in the Kalama Sutta, don't believe me, find out for yourself. And that I find over and over again, one of the most powerful teachings that we received from him. Because when somebody says to me, I trust you, I have confidence in your capacity to know who you are and to find out what supports you and what doesn't support you, you don't need me to tell you. I can tell you I've done this work and it works, but don't believe me. Find out for yourself. And so when somebody says that to us, I trust you, I have confidence in you, we meet that mark. We do that. When somebody else says, I know you can do this, then that gives us this internal confidence that says, oh, wow, look what that person sees something in me maybe I don't see. I'm going to do it. And that is really exciting. And further in this sutta, what the Buddha said is when you know for yourselves that greed, ill will, and ignorance are unhealthy and inclined towards harm and suffering, reject them. And when you know for yourselves that non-greed, non-ill will, non-delusion, clarity, are healthy and inclined towards welfare and happiness, do that. You should stay with them. That's in the sutta. And so taking refuge in the Dharma is trusting this path of practice that frees our mind and our heart from the clutches of greed and ill will and ignorance. That's really what we're doing. Because this is this practice that helps us see more clearly and be in our lives from a more wholesome place. So we support our well-being and decrease our suffering. It goes way beyond just ourselves. It really has the ripple effects to affect everything around us. So taking refuge in the Dharma is that, is coming back to this over and over again. The other way I find taking refuge in the Dharma that has this really great feedback loop that you can actually test this out. This is another direct experience way of like testing this thing, is seeing how this practice is both the path and the fruit of itself. And here's what I mean by that. In making a commitment towards all these wholesome qualities of heart and mind, just take mindfulness. If you act mindfully, that is mindful. And it leads to more mindfulness as a way of being. So you don't have to wait to do a million different practices to say, okay, now I'm mindful. Just start there. Pay attention, show up, this awareness of mind. Here's another one. By acting kindly and compassionately, that is kind and compassionate. And that leads to more embodied kindness and compassion. Just do it. Act that way. It is that way. It cultivates itself. Acting generous is generous, and it leads to more generosity. Acting ethically is ethical. It leads to a support of our ethical practices. And the opposites are true, right? So when we feel, let's say, jealousy, and it really comes out, here's jealous, and then we behave in a jealous way, it's perpetuating the jealousy. So this is how the practice is both the path and fruit of itself. And it's so easy to test that out. It's not complicated. This is taking refuge in the Dharma. Bhikkhu Bodhi says, just do two things, begin and keep going. That's a really important teaching. Just do two things, begin and keep going. And when you get lost in between the beginning and the keeping going, we come back again and we begin again. And then we realize that we're always, once we're in this practice, and we might think, I haven't been able to meditate for months for all kinds of reasons. Meditation is only part of our practice. Remember that. It's how we comport our whole selves, our commitment to non-harming, to cultivating awareness and kindness. The Buddha said, avoid what is unskillful and do what is good and purify the mind. This is the teaching of the Buddha. Avoid what is unskillful, do what is good, and purify the mind. This is the teachings of the Buddha. So this is important because this is those three things. Avoid what's unskillful, right? I mean, that says it itself. It speaks for itself. Do what is good. That speaks for itself. And purify the mind. This is our meditation practice. But this is one of three aspects that the Buddha is offering us here. So certainly meditation is very important because it fertilizes the ground of our capacity. We need to train the mind to hold still and come back and be able to turn towards the beauty and turn towards what's difficult. It's one aspect though. So this path fruit, taking refuge in the Dharma, is how we behave in our lives. And so included here in taking refuge in the Dharma includes the precepts of non-harming, which is this other very fundamental practice of how we take on inclining our lives, our whole lives, towards the exploration and the practice of non-harming. So there are five lay precepts for those of us who are not monastics, and I know many of you know them, and I find them, like the refuges, very important to come back to remind myself why I'm doing what I'm doing and to have some guideline for doing this. And it's a training. It's a process. It's just what we come back to over and over again, and it really informs who we are. So the first one is to undertake a training of supporting life, of not intentionally killing. And you'll hear these things. They sound like the Ten Commandments, but we have to interpret them for ourselves and work with them, like really work with them for ourselves. So traditionally it says, I undertake the training not to kill living beings or harm living beings. I like to think of it in its opposite. I undertake the training to do what I can to support my life, to support others' lives. But this doesn't get into questions about, do we eat meat or not, or who gets to choose about our bodies. But it opens up all the space for us to explore those questions. And that's also the beauty of taking refuge in the Dharma. We have to find out for ourselves. So we undertake the training to do our best not to harm ourselves, our bodies, or the bodies of others' life. The second one traditionally says, I undertake the training not to take that which isn't freely offered. So don't steal. Well, the other way to look at this, so it doesn't feel punitive, is I undertake the training to practice dana, to practice generosity, to offer what I can of myself in appropriate ways, whether it's my presence, literally showing up, how I show up, or whether it's materially. How can I be of service? How we share our resources? This too is a practice, and we have to find our own way with that. The third one is how we speak. I undertake the training not to cause harm with my language, with what I say, to use wise speech, to not cause harm or be abusive or exploitive with my language. Well, don't we have a lot of exposure to that right now? You know, if we look at what's happening in our culture, the amount of vitriol I mean, I feel it in my heart and in my body, and I can't take that in. It's too toxic. So my own, so the shifting is not my own, but my way of approaching this is really trying to be careful with my language. Can I use language that is non-harming, that doesn't leave others out, to be aware of the language that we use? The fourth is to undertake the training to not harm myself or anybody else with my sexuality. And sometimes this feels like, well, yeah, of course. But, you know, there are a lot of ways that this shows up. Like, you know, and right now we have all this separation, but in our non-COVID lives, some people love to hug other people. And that's one, that can be great if you're a hugger. But what if you're not? And, you know, you feel like people, you've got two, your physical space gets invaded in some way, and it's scary. So how can we be aware of how our physical bodies don't intrude on another? Can we be safe in that way? So that's how I think of this fourth precept is, can I care for my body, be aware of my own body and those that of others in a safe way, a kind way? And the last is a protection of the mind, to undertake the training of not using intoxicants to the degree that it clouds the mind. So this comes from this long tradition, I mean, 2,600 years ago of fermented drink. But we know that there's so many intoxicants, not just alcohol or drugs, but food, anything we consume, the media, anything. So do we take in anything that clouds our clarity, our capacity to actually uphold the other precepts? That's really what we're doing here. So can I keep a clear mind? So I think ultimately what these precepts are saying is that I commit to taking good care of myself and those around me. That's what this is. And this is taking refuge in the Dharma. I think I'll tell you a story. It was about 4 years ago. I know I've told this story before, so some of you may remember it, but it's okay. We repeat these stories over and over again. It's how this works. About 4 years ago, I did a long trip in the Grand Canyon on the Colorado River, where I love to be in the wilderness, and I have lots of wilderness stories. And I was on this trip, and there were probably, I don't know, 16 or 18 of us on these different boats. And we were coming into a place where we were going to camp for the night, and big canyon walls on either side. And sometimes the canyon opens up a little bit, and we were coming into camp, and we were setting up. When you come into camp, there's a little bit of a go find where you're going to sleep, set your tent up, or just set up the kitchen, set up where, how this whole camp is going to work. And we were there for a little while, and then another group came over to our camp, a private boating group. I was on a commercial trip, and they brought a woman who was in severe distress. There was a woman who was on the other side of the river who was clearly needed some help and had collapsed. And because we were a commercial trip, commercial trips typically have a satellite phone and more extensive first aid equipment than a small private trip. So these people brought this woman who was in trouble over to us and said, can you help? Can you help? And so immediately the first responders of the boating crew started to do what they could. And this woman was, in fact, turned out to be incredibly dehydrated, and the desert is notorious for that. You have to be very, very careful and drink a lot of water in the desert. And so this woman was in trouble, and some of the people in our group, not the crew, were less than kind about that here was a woman that needed some help, because they felt that her need was intruding on our good time. And this particular day was May 5th. It was Cinco de Mayo, and there were people in our group who were hoping to have a party on Cinco de Mayo. And that's not what I do. I mean, I love being out there, but there were a few people in our group that had brought lots of alcohol and a boom box, which just totally goes against my way of being in the wilderness. But here I was holding on to my fixed view of how it should be. But this was a woman who was in severe danger. And these couple of people in the group were outwardly and overtly unkind about, we shouldn't have to deal with this. Why didn't this woman drink enough water? She's totally dehydrated. Anyway, it was, to me, outrageous and really harmful and really painful. And I had to figure out how to, I didn't quite confront them. There were a few of us in the group that just said, well, these people are just so off base here. And they just wanted to have their Cinco de Mayo party and do what they were doing. And then there was the rest of us who were trying to be of help in any way we could with the crew that was trying to save this woman's life. And while that was going on, I remember this feeling of helplessness, of real helplessness. It wasn't my role to be involved in the medical intervention. And I also didn't really want to get into the conversation about how inappropriate I thought these other people were being. So what I did is I took myself to where I had set up my tent, my sleeping space, which was this beautiful place with this expansive view inside the Grand Canyon. And I sat there and I went into a meditation and decided what I had to do was ground myself in that moment, because I was losing my capacity to engage with the people who I thought were so harmful. And I sat down and retook the refuges and the precepts. And by doing this inside my own practice, sitting under this huge juniper tree, I found myself regrounding, and I found myself being able to come back into balance, to have some sense of, okay, I know what to do now. And so then after that, I didn't feel like I needed to show up and, you know, say what I thought, but I was able to go back into that situation and add to the conversation about, this is a woman who's in great danger. Let's not do this. And there were a couple people that were able to come back and say, time out. That's totally inappropriate. And to bring that back in. But I'm telling you the story because what happened is I was so triggered and agitated by first the fear of, here's a woman who's dying, literally, and we had a true emergency. And these other people who were so hard-hearted about it and felt so inappropriate that I had to come back to my own ground to clear my own mind to be able to act in a way that was more appropriate instead of unloading first. So I share this with you because that is taking refuge in the Dharma, in the precepts, to let the precepts be a guide, to come back into our own commitment to non-harming, so we really can show up in support of others. And as it turned out, the end of the story is that I don't know if she was eventually okay, but she did have a seizure disorder, and she was very dehydrated, and she was airlifted out the next morning once the Park Service could get a helicopter in there. So, you know, these things happen in our lives that are very distressing, that are very scary, but we can manage ourselves inside of them. And it was a way that practice showed up for me right inside. You know, we talk all the time about there's joy and sorrow all at the same time. And here I was in this magnificent place where I had planned to go for a very long time, and then I got to go. And here's life, right? here's life right here, the way it shows up. So how do we hold both? And the way I hold both often is really through trusting these refuges and precepts. They give me ground. So I commit to radical acts of hospitality by welcoming the stranger, both within and without, and recognizing that when I make space inside my heart for the unclaimed parts of myself, I cultivate compassion and the ability to accept those places in others. So I didn't have to create a thing about the people in our group who I thought were acting inappropriately. I could then come back and we could talk about it. And, you know, eventually they saw that their behavior was totally inappropriate and made amends, and it was fine. So we can believe in the integrity of each other in that way as well. Which brings me to taking refuge in the Sangha, committing ourselves to the community of all beings within which awakening can occur. This is what we're doing together. It's our spiritual community, our friends, our families, these communities that we are a part of, where we feel connection and belonging. Just like Michael said earlier, when we feel that connection and belonging, we are supported. There are tribes. These are our peeps, right? And our peeps come in lots of different ways, and we need to stay connected. Thich Nhat Hanh says, actually, the importance of the Sangha is that the next Buddha will likely be the Sangha. That's a beautiful thought. The next Buddha will be the Sangha. So this is so important that we include each other, that we rely on each other. There's a beautiful meta, you could call it a meta phrase, that says, make my heart a refuge for all beings. May my heart be a refuge for all beings. Or from the Metta Sutta, may all beings be at ease, omitting none. That's the practice, the intention. Or from the Fetzer Institute, their tagline says, to live in sacred relationship with ourselves, others, and the natural world. Isn't that beautiful? To live in sacred relationship with ourselves, others, and the natural world. So I commit to cultivating community by finding kindred spirits along the path, soul friends with whom I can share my deepest longings, and mentors who can offer guidance and wisdom for the journey. I'm going to end with two things. This is going to take 5 minutes, and then we're going to talk with each other. This is a poem from Alberto Rios called We Are of a Tribe. We plant seeds in the ground and dreams in the sky, hoping that someday the roots of one will meet the upstretched limbs of the other. It's not happened yet. Still together, we nod unafraid of strangers. Inside us, we know something about each other. We are all members of the secret tribe of eyes looking upward, even as we stand on uncertain ground. Up there, the dream is indifferent to time, impervious to borders, to fences, to reservations. The sky is our great home. It's the place and the feeling we have in common. This place requires no passport. The sky will not be fenced. Traveler, look up, stay a while. Know that you always have a home here. So I'm going to share my screen, and I want to, this is a beautiful song that I love about us together being connected, and just enjoy, and we'll come back in, I think it's about 3 minutes.
We shall be known by the company we keep, by the ones who circle round to tend these fires. We shall be known by the ones who sow and reap the seeds of change alive from deep within the earth. It is time now. It is time now that we thrive. It is time we lead ourselves into the well. It is time now, and what a time to be alive in this great turning we shall learn to lead in love. In this great turning we shall learn to lead in love. We shall be known by the company we keep, by the ones who circle round attend these fires. We shall be known by the ones who sow and reap the seeds of change alive from deep within the earth. It is time now. It is time now that we thrive. It is time we lead ourselves into the well. It is time now, and what a time to be alive in this great turning we shall learn to lead in love. In this great turning we shall learn to lead in love.
Sing that with us.
In this great turning we shall learn to lead in love. In this great turning we shall learn to lead in love.
What do you think? Wasn't that beautiful? I love that. Because we can do this, and this is what we do together. We really can support each other on this path, and we need to. So let's talk with each other. Any kinds of comments or questions or additions, please let us know you would like to unmute. Looks like Marcy. Hi, Marcy.
Hi, Heidi. I appreciate everything, and I need some advice about something. I had some pain come up at the beginning when you asked a question and you had mentioned something that a woman that was a Holocaust survivor mentioned. And there's a part of me that whenever I encounter hearing about that, it just brings up so much pain.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I just wonder what I might do with that.
Yeah, it's a huge question. And thank you, Marcy. In the interest of time, I actually answered your question extensively, but I think you might not have been back yet from the break, and it's on the recording. And so the audio recording of this class will be on the Spirit Rock site of Dharma Seed. But I'm going to give you the short version so you can go back and listen to it, because I want you to have that information. The short answer is go to the body. When you get triggered, you want to really place your awareness back down in your body, your feet, your hands, whether you're sitting in a chair, really take the thoughts and go down and notice sensation in the body. And wish yourself well right in that moment. May I be at ease. That's the very short answer, but the longer answer is on the tape.
No, I really appreciate it. Thank you.
My pleasure. Yes, you're
welcome. Thank you. Thank you.
Sure. Do we have another question?
Hi, Heidi.
Yes.
A question came in privately. Thank you. I read it a little too soon. For everyone, I will go ahead and post the Monastery Without Walls link to everyone. Thank you. Perhaps we'll go to Kit, who has her hand up next then.
Okay.
Kit, can you unmute yourself?
Yes. Hello.
I'm looking for Kit. Yeah, oh, there you are. Okay, I see you.
Yeah.
Okay.
First of all, I just wanted to say I recommitted to my practice about a month ago. And it came at a really good time. I've been in an interesting process, especially these last couple of days. I live in Roanoke Park, so of course, you know, it's Sonoma County, and then there's a fire, and then there's the, you know, the COVID, and you know, I lost my dog to a tumor in his spine. It was a sudden onset. This happened earlier in the pandemic. So, you know, my husband and I just have been dealing with that, loss of that. We rescued a dog who's been a source of comfort to us. And so there's that that we're dealing with. And then it seems like I'm leaving something out. Oh, I'm not even going to start on political situation or the hearings or, you know, I don't even want to go there. My brother, I'm the elder in my branch of the family. I have three brothers and they're much younger. And they're all, there's a huge, strong familial risk for prostate cancer. And so my 62-year-old brother was diagnosed with it day before yesterday. So now there's that to deal with. So I'm really grateful for this group. I mean, you know, it's really given me a grounding and a place I can go and refuge. Mm-hmm. So your talk about refuge, that's really resonated for what I've been experiencing since I recommitted to practice and dealing with other things. And then of course, this new situation in my family. And of course it's like, God, you know, can 2020 get any worse? So I know that my brother is, you know, he needs my support and I'm there for him, and I haven't really been worried about it. And that, I think that's really true. And I think that still is true, because I know there's so many things that can be done, you know, to treat people and to keep them healthy for a long time. So that's there. But I'm also noticing when I'm in meditation that all these other losses come up. I mean,
yeah,
short term, of course, from the past year. And then, of course, the long term ones, you know.
Yeah.
And these, is that kind of just part of the process? I know I'm taking a long time to wind up here, but there's been a lot going on.
There's a lot. So I think that what is absolutely true is the losses are tremendous everywhere. And I'm sorry, but where'd you go? I just lost where you are. There you are. Okay. My monitor, it changed. I'm sorry about your doggy. That's you know, that's very, very hard. All of these things are very hard. And COVID and the fires and the potential threat. So in meditation, yes, when we get quiet and we sit down with ourselves, stuff comes up. Because we get out of the way, because what happens is the thoughts, I mean, thoughts are busy, thoughts are there, but when we quiet, there's space for these things to come up. And when we are active in our daily lives, doing all of our, whatever we're doing, there's not as much room. You know, there's just a little bit more thoughts, more stuff going on. But when we're quiet, everything that's waiting to be greeted and addressed is right there. And really what's important here, Kit, is you just do what you can as you can and don't try to take it all on at once. Really caring for your own heart.
Okay.
Is that helpful?
Well, it wasn't exactly what I wanted to hear, but that's okay. You're not there to tell me what I want to hear. I understand.
This is what happens. This is what happens.
I feel like I need to stay strong. That's all. And I don't want to be deal with this other, but I guess that's just part of the process too.
What you feel is what you feel. I mean, what's literally going on versus how what you think should be going on, that's the piece of practice, right? Our ideas about life versus what's really happening. And oftentimes when we quiet the mind and open the heart, that's what comes out. And it might not be what we want.
That's true. Okay, yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. You're welcome, Kit.
Heidi, do you have time to interlace a question that came in privately?
Yes.
Okay, the question is, do we take it on faith that there is gold within each one of us? I'm not so sure about myself, let alone some of our politicians.
You know, thank you for the question. Do we take it on faith that there's gold inside each one of us? I'm not so sure about myself, and I'm really not so sure about the politicians. You know, I think that I do like to come from the place that we all are born pretty darn good. You know, we come into this life with a lot of goodness in us. And I do think it gets covered over. And I like to think that the bad behavior or behavior that we feel is dangerous behavior that we may see in others is a reflection of their suffering, is a reflection of their own greed, ill will, and ignorance. That doesn't mean they're not dangerous. And that doesn't mean that we don't wish them to go away and not cause more harm. But what happens for me when I make the decision, and I think it's a decision to try to get underneath the unwholesome behavior of others or even myself, is it decreases my suffering in the moment. It decreases the clench in the mind that all of the difficult negative thoughts. So we don't have to like anybody else. We don't have to. This practice doesn't require us to like another person. It doesn't require us to like their behavior. But it does ask us to try to see beneath the suffering, to see that there's something else that's going on that's a little bit deeper, because what we do need to do is uproot ill will in ourselves, because the ill will in ourselves will infect us more and those around us. So I don't know that I can thoroughly answer that question, except to say that what we're really dealing with here is our own hearts and minds. Because when we really work to uproot negativity, difficulty, unwholesomeness that doesn't need to be there, we tend to see more clearly and then we act better out of it. I hope that's helpful. I have some extra time if we can hang out and answer questions if you'd like. Is that okay, Carlita? Can we hang out for another 5-10 minutes? Great.
Sounds good to me.
Thanks, Andrew. Bye. Yeah, anybody who needs to go, just go. But anybody who wants to stay on, especially those who have hands raised, let's do that. Thank you so much. How about Ginger or Anne?
Yeah, Anne is unmuted currently.
Okay.
Hi.
Hi.
Yes. Hi. I just, when Kit was talking, I could so relate to what she was saying. So I just was hoping to be able to respond to her. Because today when I started meditating and I was trying to focus on my breath, all, you know, the laundry list of worries came up, like my son's health, and worried, is my daughter safe out there in the world working around all these people? And, you know, just this laundry worry, you know, thoughts about difficulties with my job, whatever. I what I do is when that's happening is I just give up focusing on the breath and I have to keep my mind busy with something else. And so I just go to the loving kindness meditation.
Yeah, I think that that's brilliant. And I think that you know, when the breath is not the anchor to hold us steady from the laundry list, then you do go to something else. Yeah, I mean, you go to loving kindness. Blessing practice is so beautiful. And so we need to be creative with practice. Sometimes for some people, counting each exhale up to 5 is really helpful. And then when you get lost between 1 and 5, starting again. But the laundry list is also fine from the perspective of mindfulness of the mind to know, oh, this is an agitated mind. This is a busy mind. Just note what it is and try not to judge the existence of, oh, this is an agitated mind. I've got a million things going in me right now. What is the experience of restlessness? And this is also where you can go back into the body. Really moving into body sensation can be very, very helpful. So I urge you to be creative with your practice in that way and to not judge yourself for having a laundry list of thoughts, knowing that this is just true. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, great. Next, thank you, Anne. We have Ginger. Go ahead.
Hey, Heidi. I have a question about when you were telling your story about being on the river, Colorado River, that it was, and you may have just answered it in the answer you just said, that when you felt, you know, the anxiety and the stress of the moment of that, with that woman being ill, and the reactions that were happening around you, that you, when you went to go sit, that you pulled up the precepts and you worked with the precepts rather than feeling it in your body, rather than sitting with the anxiety and the stress, the mental stress you were dealing with, and how to react to these people. That it was interesting to me that you jumped to the precepts. And I guess maybe because to me that's more intellectual than physical. Wouldn't have been my first choice, but I was just
wondering
how that worked for you.
You know, it happened quite spontaneously. I sat down, I remember it so clearly. I sat down on my stuff, you know, like my bag and my sleeping bag. And I remember sitting there and it was probably 5 in the afternoon. So the sun was just becoming a little more gentle and we'd been on the water. And so I was physically a little tired because it was the end of a lot of a day. I remember sitting there and I couldn't quite settle my mind. My agitation was too high. It was too upsetting of a situation. And quite spontaneously, the precepts came about what can I do in this moment? And I needed to realign my heart because I was angry. I was number one, frightened for the woman who was in such danger, knowing I couldn't do anything about it. And I didn't even think I personally needed to do anything about it. I just knew, I have a nursing background. And so I had a perspective of what was happening. And so I felt fearful for her in that moment. And my agitation was up and I was also tired. And so I didn't have the focus of mind in that moment just to tend to my breath. I needed to give my mind something to do because of my own agitation and fear. And really quite spontaneously, the precepts came up. And so just realigning, I undertake the training not to cause harm. How can I be of service? Was really calming for me. It just brought me back into my priorities and helped me not be so angry with the people who were acting badly, and also helped me trust that the Park Service would come get her out of there and that there were enough services right there that could sustain her for this short period of time. So that's what happened. It was just very spontaneous.
Cool. It's kind of the magic of the Dharma that
I think that's right.
It comes around. It may come around from behind, but it catches you if you've got it. So yeah.
Yeah, and it gets you like we can trust we're going to get what we need.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Yeah.
Heidi, I do have one question that came in privately, if you'd like to.
Last one, yes.
Last one, okay, great, here it is. The message that we should take refuge into our bodies in times of stress is new to me. Thinking about it, I realize that I don't have a strong instinct to think of me as other than my brain, and I'm mainly a critic of my body. Heidi, do you have a suggestion for how to develop a better relationship with one's body?
Thank you for the question. Isn't this an enormous question? So I believe many of us have been adversarial with our bodies because it comes from our conditioning about if we don't look this way, we're not enough. Or if we do look this way, we are less than. And so we have been conditioned from going way back that our bodies are not okay the way they are. So this is a place that I've done a lot of work for myself and to try to shift the judgmental mind on the opinions. Do I believe what these external conditions are telling me my body should look like? That's done me a lot of damage. My body is the shape it is because of my genetics. My body is in the health condition because of my genetics, because of what I eat, because of what I do. So many factors that influence our relationship with our body. But what is so important is our bodies are what keep us physically alive in this world. And it's kind of a miracle. The heart keeps beating, the lungs keep breathing, all the fluids in the body keep moving. We have muscles and we have nerves and we are of the earth. We can sense the body, what we take in, what we eat has been grown somewhere. And so if we can shift our relationship to the body by what it does for us. To me, that's helped a lot, that the body is going to go through times of, just like Ellen shared with us, times of illness, times of wellness. It's going to change. We are going to be in a relationship with, I don't like it when it's like this, or I'm in pain, it shouldn't be like this. But to know that we're not exempt from any of the body processes, and our job through primarily self-compassion and loving kindness practice is to make friends with ourselves, our bodies themselves, to really be appreciative of the fact that if you can walk on 2 feet and walk across the room, that your body supports you to do that, that's a big deal. It actually is. That we can see, that we can hear and taste and smell and have a body that supports you to come into this class, this practice right now. And then our job truly is to start not taking in the messages that we get that we are not okay as we are. Now, that's also to say that what can I do to support my well-being? So when we go to the precepts about not consuming that which harms us, taking that seriously. And then if we have habits of consumption of whatever it is that might not support our physical well-being, learning to change those habits and learning to come into this place of loving ourselves. That's what this is about. This is about ultimately really loving ourselves. So this practice of come into the body as a refuge, come into the body as a refuge. I mean, that can be a foreign concept for sure. But what if you right now, as I'm talking, just feel yourself sitting as you are, or standing as you are. Feel your feet on the ground and just notice sensation in the body. There is a body. That was a primary teaching from the Buddha. There is a body, but we're taught to live in our minds. What if we actually say, wow, look at what this it's breathtaking what this body does. So we learn over time when we use phrases like, may I feel safe. May I feel healthy and my body be supported with strength. Taking those seriously, actually cultivating appreciation for what the body can do and compassion for what the body can't do. When we are in times of illness, to notice my body needs nurturing and that it's not your fault, right? It's not our fault that the body has a certain shape or design or the genetics or that we become ill. It's just what happens. Now, we obviously need to care for our habits, so we are cultivating habits that support our well-being and cultivating the strength to let go of habits that don't. So we could do about a week-long or more retreat on this subject. How do I make friends with my body? How do I take refuge in my body? Just start right here. Just start right in this moment, noticing there is a body, everything that it does. I hope that was helpful. It's a big conversation. So as we go forward in the week, just one more little announcement. If you ever want to practice with me regularly, I offer a Monday afternoon, 4 p.m. drop-in on Zoom, and you can come anytime. My website is pacificmindfulness.com. And you can find everything that I've got going on there. Love to see you. I will be here for teaching this class next Wednesday again. So join me then. And in the meantime, may your practice really support you and offering up the goodness of all of our efforts so that all beings everywhere feel safe, have enough to eat and adequate shelter, have access to healthcare and be part of a welcoming community, and may all of the suffering be eased. Thank you, everybody. See you next time. Be well, be safe. Love yourself.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.